In the fight against COVID-19, government and medical officials in America have resorted to extreme measures to prevent the spread of the virus and treat the infected, including massive testing and vaccination efforts, overhauling our hospital capacity, and imposing restrictions on ordinary life. But some New Yorkers are arguing that hospitals and doctors aren't doing all they can to help their loved ones currently on ventilators and have brought lawsuits to force the administering of the antiparasitic drug ivermectin, even though it has not been federally approved to treat the respiratory illness. To discuss the legal maneuvering here and much more, we're joined once again by Rob Rosbrough, author of the New York Appeals blog at nysappeals.com and a litigation partner with Whiteman, Osterman, and Hanna. Welcome back to the show, Rob.
Thanks again for having me, David.
So the USA Today Network's David Robinson has identified at least 14 lawsuits trying to compel hospitals to administer ivermectin. Generally speaking, what is the legal argument they're making as to force health officials to administer an unapproved treatment for COVID-19?
Well, what the plaintiffs are saying is after you've run through all the approved courses of medical treatment for COVID-19 that hospitals and doctors would typically prescribe, that they have an individual right to try experimental treatments and other things. And they're asking the courts to order the hospitals and doctors to take those additional steps once all of the normal courses of medical treatment have been exhausted.
An individual right. What does that mean?
So there is a statute in New York that basically allows patients to have a right to try experimental treatments, and it's usually used in the context of cancer treatments or something like that, where you have a life-threatening disease and, you know, normal courses of whether it's radiation or chemotherapy have not worked, that they should have a right to try new therapies that are coming out but don't yet have FDA approval or the approvals that they would need to be used in medical treatments on a regular basis. So that's basically the argument that the plaintiffs in these cases are making, is that ivermectin isn't approved yet by the FDA for medical treatments, and they'd want the judges to compel hospitals to allow them to take ivermectin to try to treat COVID-19. Now, it's an interesting theory, I guess. I don't really understand it. I wouldn't want a judge determining my medical treatment. You know, judges are arbiters of the law. They're not arbiters of medical treatments and what's going to be best. And if a doctor says, I'm not willing to do this because there isn't proven that it's going to work, or there isn't even some evidence that it's going to work, then I would trust the doctor's thoughts. But hey, you know, judges, some plaintiffs think that judges should be able to control medical treatment. So here we are.
Well, if a patient is essentially at death's door as the result of COVID-19 and a hospital has exhausted all approved treatments, what is the disincentive legally to trying something untested, like ivermectin in this case, which is now the subject of clinical trials?
So the disincentive for the hospitals and the doctors is claims of medical malpractice. If there were, you know, something like that ivermectin were to cause, whether it's, you know, contributing negatively to or interacting negatively with other medical treatments or other drugs that the patients are on, and it causes, you know, some other type of harm to the patient, the doctors or the hospitals could be subject to a medical malpractice suit, saying that, you know, this treatment wasn't authorized for use for treatment of COVID-19, and there's no evidence, so it was outside of the normal standard of care that doctors have to exercise to do this. So that's sort of their fear, is that if, you know, ivermectin is, they're compelled to use ivermectin, they don't want to later face lawsuits for using it.
There's not some sort of waiver that they could get a patient or a patient's relatives or loved ones to sign?
They could try, but then you would get to whether a waiver like that is enforceable. And for someone who is, you know, out of capacity on a ventilator, you know, getting that person's consent, if there isn't like a power of attorney or a medical, you know, a medical appointee who's been designated to make decisions for the patient, that giving that person's consent is going to be very difficult. And, you know, then you don't really want to have to litigate whether the waivers were effective or not, because there are plenty of situations where waivers are signed that they ultimately end up being struck down by courts as not a knowing or intelligent waiver of rights.
Throughout the pandemic, you and I have talked about the tendency of judges to defer to the government's ability and responsibility to preserve the public health and upholding some of the actions that they've taken in that endeavor. Do judges traditionally defer to medical experts on treatments? And if they do, are they following that principle in the ivermectin cases in New York that have been resolved so far?
Yes, that's typically true. I mean, if you see some of these cases, the judges have said, you know, look, we decide issues of law. The doctors and hospitals have said that there is virtually no benefit to trying ivermectin as a treatment. It's not the judge's place to, you know, interfere with those recommendations. And that's basically what the judges who have denied this treatment have said in their decision. You know, it's outside of the judge's role to be determining, you know, what medical treatment is appropriate, and they rely on the medical experts to make those decisions. And that's effectively what the judges are saying here.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking with Rob Rosbrough, author of the New York Appeals blog at nysappeals.com, and a litigation partner with Whiteman, Osterman, and Hanna. Because there have been so many cases that have come up in recent days and weeks with regards to ivermectin, is there the possibility that this will eventually be resolved at some higher court level instead of just our state Supreme Court level, and we'll have some sort of precedent set that would address these issues in the future? Or do you anticipate these will keep coming up one at a time and will have to be handled on their merits individually?
I think because the cases are so fact-specific, mm-hmm. that they will end up being handled one at a time rather than as on a you know, legal issue on appeal, because each of the patient's treatments is going to be different and each of the recommendations are going to be different. There isn't going to necessarily be a common thread or legal issue involved. And from a timing perspective, you know, the treatments that they're talking about, you know, the appeals process takes such a long time to work itself out that most of these cases will be resolved, you know, either one way or the other, unfortunately, before the appeals court would ever be able to address the issues.
Pivoting to a familiar topic, vaccine mandates, where do things stand with the state's effort to impose a vaccine mandate on healthcare workers, specifically at hospitals and nursing homes, which has been the subject of numerous legal challenges, including an effort to ensure a religious exemption for New Yorkers who don't want to get vaccinated but want to work in the healthcare field?
So the case that we talked about before, there was a temporary restraining order in place stopping the state from, you know, enforcing the portion of the mandate that would have compelled employers to deny religious exemption. The judge in that case ultimately issued his decision and issued a preliminary injunction stopping the state for the duration of the case now from compelling employers like hospitals to deny religious exemption. So what that means is that healthcare workers can ask for religious exemption from the vaccine mandate, but there's no guarantee that their employers have to grant them. That those, you know, requests will be determined on a case-by-case basis. The state's now appealed that decision and sought immediate temporary relief from the Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit in New York City, and we'll see where that goes.
Are there competing cases here with competing rulings, or are we just following one through line?
No, we are. So there's another case out on Long Island in the Eastern District of New York where the judge held almost diametrically opposite what the judge in the Northern District held, and held there was no religious exemption from the vaccine mandate. So that case is headed, you know, also to the Second Circuit, and because there will be competing cases, it'll presumably be addressed at the same time, and we'll see where it goes from there.
this is not the only vaccine mandate we have in New York State, and not the only one we have that applies to healthcare workers. Will this case, however it's resolved, be some sort of precedent-setting ruling, or in this case of like the ivermectin, is it very fact-specific and future mandates will be decided if there are challenges on a case-by-case basis?
This one is much more generally applicable. The religious exemption issue is a constitutional issue, whether there must be a religious exemption to a vaccine mandate under the constitutional rights that the doctors are being asserted. And that would presumably apply in a number of different areas. You know, it could apply to teachers. It could apply for a number of other professions that have vaccine mandates. And so that one is going to have a much broader impact than any of the ivermectin litigation does.
We mentioned a vaccine mandate for teachers, and that's what we're seeing in New York City, where opponents had hoped to get relief from the U.S. Supreme Court to stop that mandate from taking effect. Where do things stand with that last-minute Hail Mary?
So the Justice Sonia Sotomayor, who is the circuit justice for the Second Circuit, who hears emergency applications coming out of the New York federal courts, denied the request for an emergency stay of the New York City teachers' vaccine mandate. The plaintiffs in that case had argued that they have a substantive due process right and an equal protection right to avoid the vaccine mandate and instead do, you know, normal testing like other municipal employees in New York City have been allowed. But, you know, with this, the Justice Sotomayor wasn't having it. She just rejected the application out of hand without referring it to the whole court, and the teachers are left having to comply with the mandate while the case winds its way through the courts.
And one justice can make that sort of decision for the entire court? Because what if five or six members wanted to hear it and might potentially side with the teachers?
So, yes. When there's an emergency application like that made to the United States Supreme Court, whoever the circuit justice is gets to either decide that on their own or refer the matter to the entire court. And Justice Sotomayor decided in this case to decide it on her own without referring it to the entire court, and possibly because she thought that it might have come out the other way if she didn't. So that was a little bit of inside the court's strategy on her part to decide the emergency application on her own without referring it to the rest of the justices.
Well, we've been speaking with Rob Rosbrough. He's the author of the New York Appeals blog, which you can find at nysappeals.com. He's also a litigation partner with Whiteman, Osterman, and Hanna, and he's who I call whenever I have an emergency appeal. Rob, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks again, Dave. I appreciate it.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.